take these twists and turns, man, I don't blame you. I said, listen, I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. I crossed the valley stair, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. Milwaukee, Rockville, Waterloo, Lackawanna, Fairview, Melbourne, Steve, Susquehanna, Lewisburg, Stroudsburg, Gillingsburg, Sony, Harrisburg, Pittsburgh, Wellsburg, Round City, Mountain Top, Glen Rock,
Gladwell, No.
I was reading this story about how one was, I'm having less sex than I thought of you.
I thought.
Thanks, Jordy.
You single-handedly lowered the statistic for a whole cohort.
Yeah. Thanks.
Great. Look, if there weren't a few Jordy foot and mouth moments, I mean,
it wouldn't be a real conversation.
So, well,
I think we should start.
I think, definitely. With that, you want that?
You want that in there?
It was pretty funny. So this is very exciting. This is our first new live podcast in a while.
Yeah.
And welcome to Barnstorming.
Yes.
This is Jordy.
This is Taylor.
And Sam.
Taylor in the same time zone.
I know, it's crazy, yeah. But I really do feel like I'm still over there.
And, we're, you know, our not, plan... Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Not that much, because it's... It is... I mean, it's probably like... I don't even know what time it is. Is it like 10?
It's 10:20, yeah.
10:20, yeah.
Well, and I like...
4:20 over there.
Yeah, and I like how... you said that, you know, we're planning to get this up by Wednesday morning, and that'll move us from kind of, that's like a 1,000 factor reduction in our turnaround time from our last couple of episodes.
That's true, yeah.
Maybe it's a little ambitious.
No, it doesn't, these are the easy ones to do, relatively. Just throw in an intro, outro, compress it, bada boom, bada beam. So, fun podcast news. Judy Herschel, our friend who ran for Congress in the primary,
PA 12
from Susquehanna County, who I always thought she had a really interesting biography. She out of the blue contacted me and said that she and a couple of women friends are going to start a podcast after the primary and wanted to come hang out with us to see how the magic happens. I was like,
wow.
It's like that's a high compliment, and there ain't a lot of magic.
Ooh.
Okay.
But that's cool.
Yeah,
that's wonderful. Yeah, yeah. I think she's running for a county commissioner.
She's running for county commissioner
in Susquehanna County.
Mm-hmm.
Good news. So yeah. We're going to come up with a limerick on the spot.
Oh.
We already tried this, and I'm horrendous at it.
I couldn't even pronounce limericist. Okay.
I'm just kidding. We don't have to do that.
We got as far as there was a man who wrote limericks.
Yeah, and I ruined it. Thank you.
All right. Well, that whole thing was just an avant-garde limerick. Okay.
It's like a John Cage limerick. Okay, I missed that.
Great. So now that we've gotten that out of the way,
I think we want to just to kind of warm up. We're going to do our favorite trees. That was a theme from the tonight at the Green New Deal meeting.
Yeah, they had a icebreaker.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go right in. I'm gonna go Eastern Hemlock. I love hemlocks.
State tree of Pennsylvania, right?
It is, but shouldn't we say the Commonwealth tree? I've been on the thing about this. I'm trying to stop saying
tree
state.
Of the Commonwealth.
Tree of the Commonwealth. I love hemlocks. They're just beautiful. When I've been out camping and stuff, it's so great
it's like
to be under
47 states and 3 commonwealths.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that
Virginia and
then
Massachusetts
some protectorates and territories?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. Do you object to? I mean, I feel
I'm
like
I'm not
it,
originally from a commonwealth.
Nor am I.
Just like whatever it's a state.
I am.
But, okay.
I just wish that we lived out the values of a commonwealth.
I mean, exactly.
I've lived in another commonwealth.
Massachusetts?
Massachusetts, yeah.
But I agree. That's
it actually isn't Virginia a commonwealth?
Mm-hmm. It is.
See, I've lived in all three. Mm-hmm. There you go. Great.
I have too.
Okay.
I have not.
Okay.
But I have lived in Massachusetts.
But you have been the governor of a protectorate under a brutal colonial regime.
That's true. And let me tell you, that was one hell of an experience. I will never forget that.
Great for the resume.
But no, I agree. I feel like Commonwealth and like sets us up to talk about Commonwealth, common goods, commonality. It's much more interesting than state, which sounds to me a bit like cold and.
But at that level, I feel like it's a technicality, and all the other states would also claim that they were about that, and they just weren't as good at making it.
Why are we fighting about this?
We don't have to. Let's go back to the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll just say in a Commonwealth. I would like to be getting a check every month for all the shale gas that they're taking out of our Commonwealth and the water, too.
That was, Nicole had the best line tonight, but we're
privatized profit, socialized cost.
Yeah, and socialized cost. Like, yes. Damn, that is awesome.
Well, it is. I love it too. It's. I mean, I don't. People used it when we talked about the financial crisis. I mean, yeah. You know, but it summarizes it perfectly.
Yeah. Totally.
My favorite tree is the willow that used to be in my backyard. That specific tree, I think, was my favorite.
Hold on. If you're going to go specific trees, I had a hemlock in Yancey County, North Carolina, that I had a really powerful relationship with.
Okay. All
right. When I worked for one summer as a counselor at this great place called CeeLo, Camp CeeLo, it was kind of a ritual.
Like CeeLo Green?
Yes, ELO. Is that how CeeLo Green spells it? I don't know. Anyway, it's not named for him. So it was this great, awesome Quaker, you know, farm camp for kids, and best job I ever had. But there was this one hemlock that was kind of like a mile from the camp, and like on your day off, not everyone, but you would go, and you had to like get help to get into it. But this hemlock probably went like 40 feet above the canopy, and you know, you could climb to the top, and there was a bottle, and you could put a message in, and
take like, a drink.
Yeah, no, you want to take a drink of whatever's out there. But anyway, and I think about, you know, like the hemlocks have taken a huge, is it an aphid, I think, that's attacking them? Or
woolly adelgid.
Woolly adelgid. So, you know, think about that tree. How about you?
Both general and specific ficus, Benjamina tree.
Ficus are the ones people grow in their homes that are really big
they
leaves.
Grow them in their homes, but
I'm just trying to think what it looks like
in the natural world. Well, and actually I'm a little bit torn because actually a royal poinciana would be also very nice.
A royal
poinciana. Uh-huh. The two are paired for me. They're both southern Florida trees, tropical trees, and the ficus is a banyan. These
meaning
huge trees with dropping roots, and they can have infinite trunks and massive canopy, and they become the best climbing trees there are. They are tree houses without any work engaged. But often they're paired, they're near the royal poincianas, which is the greatest light filter known to.
Meaning it absorbs a lot of light?
No, it just, like, sitting or lying beneath it, it's it has these fern-like leaves, and then also at certain times, you know, these really almost iridescent, luminescent blossoms.
Hmm.
They're either the sort of intense orangey, basically orangey color, or intense yellow. And just the entire combination of light, shadow, blue sky, and flowers. It's
that's
amazing.
Great. Cool. It's good. That's a good Arbor Day thing.
Ones that I have spent large amounts of time in.
Okay.
In South Florida. Yeah.
By yourself or?
Sometimes by myself. Sometimes with other people. I have.
First kiss.
No.
We need to sex this puppy up a little bit. Yeah.
But no. Let's just say I had long relationships with these trees, like over decades. So.
Are some of them still there?
Like, yes.
That's cool.
In public parks? They're amazing.
Oh, man, it's amazing that you can't clear-cut public parts. It's amazing. It's
You can't clear... Are you trying to get to the Alliance Church thing?
I am.
That's good. I like that. Yeah. Go ahead. You know, local news?
Local news. The Alliance Church has clear-cut Turtle Creek Park.
Turtle Creek Temporary Park.
Yeah. God's body incarnate.
Right.
They've done that.
And I went back and I went back and looked, at least in the daily item, he said, you know, we'll continue to preserve nature's beauty for people. And I was like, well, okay, you kind of left a loophole the size of a tree mower to drive through that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just amazing to me, like...
You should paint the picture for our listeners.
Yeah, so there used to be this giant... I mean, I think...
It's not that big.
Well, it used to feel giant.
It did.
Because it had all of these winding sort of trails.
It's kind of a boggy, kind of bumpy...
It's a wet...
I would guess it was like 120 acres.
That much?
80?
When it was all cut, when we saw it the other day, it didn't look that big. No. But I'm not very good at judging an acre.
Me neither. But now it's just completely cut to the ground, and it's just like all the magic has been sucked out of it. Is this like this place by this stream where you felt like it was like a mile away because you went on all these zigzaggy parking lines?
It definitely.
Like, oh, it's just right over.
It's just kind of bushy, thorny, brambly overgrowth with these trails. And you know, we used to do those capture the flag games. Mm-hmm. Those were awesome. We'd have these New Year's Day capture the flag games with adults versus kids, and they were awesome.
I had ongoing frustrations with the lack of conservation around the creek, actually, because we used to go hang out on the creek before it got developed as a park. And people had actually sort of cleared too much of the underbrush by the creek. I mean, it was very park-like, but it also wasn't really preserving the sort of ecosystem functions of the floodplain that you would want to have. But now, by comparison, you know, it's now a hellscape, so.
I mean, it is, you know, and the thing is, I took a picture, we can add it to the show notes. It wasn't as artistic as I was hoping for, but there's this sad sign of what the trails were, and it foregrounds this, they, you know, cut everything down. And let's say they're, you know, the church bought it, there was some confusion on Facebook, so I don't want to say whether, it was unclear whether they are going through or it's in planning or whatever, but let's assume they build a building there. It's not clear to me, I mean, why did you need to cut everything down to build your building? They're not going to, I mean...
It's going to have a lot of parking lots, and I think it's also going to have sports facilities.
Half of it's probably going to be a parking lot.
They'd have to spend so much leveling that for sports.
I agree. It's
That's crazy.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of...
I mean, there must have been other pieces. I mean, maybe they got a good deal, but...
There's no way that this is... I mean, there's other land.
Well, we're also getting another mega church across from the natural Food and Garden Store, right?
I saw that.
More property. And
right.
Of course, we already have mega churches across the way. Do we really have that much demand for mega churches? This is very interesting to me.
Well, it is. Yeah.
I mean, they're building them, so it kind of answers your question.
I guess. But that right, but it's sort of a little mega church boomlet.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. We went to two, this was a banner night in Lewisburg. We went to two events, the Market Street.
Two events and a podcast.
And a podcast.
Yeah, three events.
That's right, three events. The best for last. So we all went to the Market Street study public information session. We'll go chronologically. So I'll just, and then after we talk about that, we'll talk about this Green New Deal town hall meeting. So just laying out the picture, Market Street is a state highway, Highway 45, that runs through the middle of Lewisburg. And about a year to 18 months ago, does that sound right? All the local people observed that there was a big increase in truck traffic and questions about whether that had to do with a local construction project for a bigger road called the Central Susquehanna Valley Thruway and or... other road work going on in a neighboring town seemed to have pushed that traffic there, but
also known as the CSVT.
CSVT. So, so out of that came this like public-private partnership between some local leading citizens and the borough government to try and like deal with this traffic problem. And Sam, you were on the steering committee, right?
I was invited to be part of the steering committee. Yeah. So yes.
So I mean, my understanding has always
sort
been
of luminaries. Mm-hmm. I'm not a luminary.
You sure you are? you're my luminary.
Thank you so much.
I'm guttering over here. One of the main goals is like, if we're really going to try and get PennDOT or other state agencies to try and help us, we need really good data. So they've been collecting all kinds of hella interesting data, traffic counts, video data, seismographic, noise. And this was part of it, was this meeting. So
yeah,
does that set the stage?
Yes. And it was sort of an initial report back, so they showed the kinds of data they were getting, but not comprehensive
what did you,
data.
You know, as somebody who's done a lot of community facilitation, what did you think of showing some of the data?
I thought that was fine. I thought it was a little confusing the way they laid it out, and actually my husband was jumping out of his seat, like,
I'm shocked.
For Kim to, like, move things along a little bit at the beginning, but...
Yeah.
I was hoping more for to get to the public meeting and the questions and the discussion more quickly.
I did, like, I heard, like, two people around me sort of saying, well, what, you know, what is the results? What are the results? And I don't think that they understood well enough that this was about part of the data collection.
Yeah.
I mean, that I was disappointed about that. But, I mean, I also...
About?
That there wasn't more data to show.
Oh.
But it was just like, I kind of thought that's why we were here.
Well, it was a preliminary report.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was mostly, ideally, to collect data. It was collecting a different kind of data, anecdotal data. They wanted to hear from people who weren't just me, who has talked to them extensively, about people's actual experiences on the road.
You know, I will say the one thing that, so for a while I was renting an apartment on Market and Second, and one of the things they talked about was, A, the speed of the traffic during the night, and B, there was somebody else that was talking about that problem of trucks going down the bridge, and then they have their first light at Second. And I mean, I felt like every night there was like a tornado. Well, not actually a tornado, because we've had bad
trigger warning, okay?
Yeah. I felt like there was a, I mean, it was incredible, and my window panes were shaking. So it was kind of nice to just kind of be reaffirmed that was really bad.
Well, and on the one hand, they said, well, we're not going to capture exactly where there was a question. Are you going to capture in between Second and the bridge? They're going to capture coming off the bridge. And having clocked people coming off the bridge, let me say, that's where they're going to be going fastest.
Yeah.
And in fact, especially if you're going both directions, people leaving town.
Oh, they're hitting that bridge hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like you can feel it. Like they're like, oh, I had to stop for pedestrians. Oh, too many lights. Right. Zoom. And then they hit a light on the other side.
Right. Well, and I actually, the other one, and I didn't check, but the other one is once they pass 4th Street between 4th and when they get to 7th. Of course, you go down to the railroad tracks. And that's also another drop. And so depending on the traffic, you can also get this little charge heading.
True funny story. As I was going into the meeting at that intersection of 5th and Market, I was in the crosswalk. It's not a light. And I was already in the crosswalk. And a woman, and I could see her. And she sort of was deciding whether or not she had to stop. And she decided to like go through the intersection. I started yelling at her, which is actually honestly one of my weekly joys, is a chance to just yell at people.
You have plenty of opportunity. Well, right,
but I feel like because you were there, like four people were in the building, and they're kind of like, "Oh my goodness, Jordy's yelling at that." And so it was a little lady. I was like, "I don't care." Like,
yeah, it's dangerous.
It is dangerous.
I mean, can you imagine somebody with limited visibility or hearing or something like that in that exact same spot?
I mean, I'm for me, one, yes.
I mean, Jordy, you're a strapping man, you know,
with a bike.
With a bike, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, it's hard not to notice me.
Yeah, exactly.
And honestly, like I often step into the intersection making eye contact, but I know, you know, Sarah Jane, who's a friend of ours, was there, and she mentioned like, you know, kind of like pedestrians in my experience often do kind of wait until the car sees them. I step into the intersection and I'm like, you better effing stop. What? Better fucking stop.
But you're also, let's just say you have more of a presence than some of the rest of us.
Yeah.
So
yeah. No, I'm not saying that I have the right solution, but.
Well, so Dick McGinnis, God rest his soul, former professor of traffic engineering and patron saint of the traffic committee for the borough, used to be like, well, they always stop for me. And I'm like, you're 6.5 feet tall and you're a guy.
Was he that tall? Okay.
He was really tall.
I don't remember
He was very skinny. So
I remember he was
maybe
skinny.
Maybe he wasn't 6.5, but he just looked really tall.
Yeah. I mean,
those patron saint candles.
When you clock in at 4'10", I mean, everybody looks 6'5".
Thanks so much.
No, for the record, Sam is much taller than that.
I am. I'm like a towering 5'3", just like Picasso.
Yeah. Was he really that short?
Yeah, he was.
Huh.
Napoleon, too.
So I think that's...
that's a whole complex, though.
Right. You know, Napoleon wasn't short. The British, that was British propaganda. He was average. Quick fun fact.
Well, there is debate because of the whole French foot thing, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, I heard on a podcast that he wasn't that short, but so.
Well, then what was he compensated for?
Not getting Russia, obviously. Can we bring it back to the traffic study, please? So,
graph, the march into Russia, we could make some awesome graphics of the data they're collecting on Market Street.
Yeah. If only he had one of those traffic counters counting the of compressed air.
The aerial.
Oh, that's the 18th Cavalry or whatever. Okay, so I had to me one thing that I thought was interesting, and Sam, I don't know if you know something about this, or Taylor, but like, well, I was just thinking about people who like study traffic, but like this question about measuring, like this came up in like three ways for me. This like question of like trying to measure unrealized demand or need. So This one resident, Steve Buonapane, who may or may not be related to you, said something about, like, what about walkers and bikers? And they said, well, we have video. And I was thinking, like, but you're not measuring people who aren't walking or biking because they don't like Market. And yeah. and that's similar. I guess that's similar to what Sarah Jane was saying. It was like I wonder.
There is something called suppressed demand or latent demand. Real quick.
And so another one to me also is, you know, they said they're sending out a questionnaire to the business owners. But what about people who aren't coming? So. Suppressed demand. Okay, I mean, the only right. way I'll tell you. Well, I'm curious what your answer is. Then I have a thought from.
Well, so background. The first questioner actually, Tom Greaves, he had brought up the yeah. how do you talk to the business owners and are engineers really the right people to talk to? And they did point out that Kim Wheeler for the borough is really heading that up, but he pointed out that perhaps a sociologist should really be taking this on. That it's kind of a different category of information, and then how does it get folded into the other information. And it is true that whatever we get in that is going to be less compelling to PennDOT. So that's important to remember. We have hired these engineers to be the PennDOT whisperers, you know, and at a certain level try to convert our inchoate, you know, struggles into something that PennDOT might listen to. At the same time, we do want to collect information that will tell us something. At the state level, PennDOT is grappling with the question of latent demand and suppressed demand. There is an acknowledgement that the previous response to, say, how many people cross at an intersection and realizing that no one crosses may not be an indication that no one wants to cross. They have started to recognize that, but it's hard to quantify. So,
well, it's not.
Yes and no. I mean, part of the problem is that it's actually hard for people to envision alternatives. So, yes, there are some people who realize they're being thwarted and could actually register that. But there are other people, it just doesn't occur to them. Like, they would never think to do that particular maneuver in the absence of a safe way of doing it, which is actually fairly reasonable, and I have to admit to being unreasonable.
Okay, hold on. Yeah. But how do traffic engineers or engineers, how do you measure this latent demand?
They're still working on that, but they're at least starting to acknowledge it.
Okay,
at
first
PennDOT
of all,
state
you,
level.
I mean, you could just simply do a survey of people and say, would you walk more?
Yes. I mean, well, and so in fact, we just did our local bike survey.
But are they going to use that?
Which asked exactly that.
Are they going to use that?
They're I don't know, but we're gonna have our initial report of data available right now, and I'm gonna
okay,
tell
then
more
then,
about
this,
like,
tell me more about this bike survey that you did.
So I've been working with a Bucknell group from Environmental Studies 411. So they're doing a capstone course, and I sort of had a ready-made project for them because in 2006, ancient history now, I had done a bike survey through the traffic committee, and I'd had this idea since Walk It, Bike It came into existence that we should update it, bring it into the 2010s and maybe the 2020s. Yeah. and so they helped by, we sort of reworked it a little bit, and we can also created a online version of it. So it now exists as a template or something we can play with in the future. We've already had 120 responses, and they're going to be reporting back on responses we've received so far, actually later this week. And then I'm planning on keeping it open because I actually get the results of their work. I have it accessible.
So what were the headlines from the 2006? Like
in 2006, I mean, this was before the rail trail, and basically people wanted a place to ride. It was clear that people rode some and would like to ride more, but there wasn't a safe place to ride. And so, duh.
Yeah.
You know. Since then, we did build the rail trail, so that actually filled some of that demand. There is actually a destination location sort of site for some of that. But at the same time, I was also asking at the time about just sort of a more functional network. Like, where do you try to get to as part of your daily routine? Mm-hmm. And what can you get to? What can't you? And so, again, in 2006, people wanted to ride more. There was already existing demand. People wanted to ride more, but people didn't feel it was safe. And they also noted that it wasn't, that Route 15 was an issue, obviously not because people were riding along it, but because they couldn't get across it, which was sort of obvious, but at the same time, PennDOT wasn't thinking about it that way. Like, even when we did the corridor study, people were like, oh, well, we need to make Route 15 into a boulevard. And it's like, really, we just need to be able to get across it. sore subject at the moment, but okay.
Yeah. So
I feel like I saw in the, it might have been in the Union County housing report, that there, it said that something like 30% of people that live in the borough commute to work by walking or biking.
It's a very large number, partly because there's so many students.
Yeah.
And Bucknell faculty. Students and faculty who yeah. actually do get to
and also I mean every a lot of the well not all but a lot of them
yeah, yeah. And in fact right there's but
I mean Jody Horn
really
wakes up and goes downstairs
right
well I could but, I think of a couple
and
people.
Rob
yeah.
and Kathy Snyder
yeah.
And,
yeah but there are even people I mean I've been setting up signs on Route 15 and I see people walking up Route 15 to Walmart
yeah
to work.
I've never seen that. What time are you seeing them?
Like at 8 a.m.
That's fucking insane.
Yes, it is. And that, I mean,
what would happen? What would happen if we had a citizens carpool, like people who are willing to like?
That would be awesome. What I really want.
Another rail trail that goes north south.
I would like to have a north south.
Like, what time does their shift start?
Wait, let's get back to the...
Right. I mean, the problem is there are many shifts. There are people who are working on the shift question, but Walmart is not a shift place, right? Well, people... I think it's got so many people
through,
on... Yeah, people cycle through on
well,
really
I bet the different departments are on different shifts schedules,
yeah.
too.
Whereas the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce is working with large employers that do have shift work and trying to develop a transit plan. It's very...
Well, good for them.
I'm glad they're working on it. It's very focused on large-scale yeah. buses. I'm very frustrated with sort of the lack of
it's great to see
more
Bob
flexible
here,
thinking.
The,
yeah, he was
tonight.
There.
I was really
sorry, we can go back to that.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you guys are, I'm going to say, a little in the weeds.
Sorry.
But yeah. one thing, going back to the question we started on 3 minutes ago, was how would you measure latent demand? One is you survey people. Two is you survey them in ways that I've kind of learned at arm's length from some of the stuff I've seen you and other engineers do, is you give them like visual scenarios, like, you know, like if you could get to where you need to go this way and like show them a picture, like I'm even thinking out loud now,
yeah.
like have them look at like somehow like a quick video, like this is what it would be like, you know what I mean?
I got them. I got like,
yeah,
I have
yeah.
GoPro
yeah.
now.
And, so and the other one is real quick is like, I don't know why we couldn't look at, you know, reasonably statistically comparable towns that have much more walkable infrastructure and look at the rate of usage.
Yeah.
This idea that like we can, that Lewisburg is N of one is kind of silly from a social yeah. science perspective.
So here's a small example. So
we have like 1 minute to talk about this.
Okay. So I used to live for a while, I was living on North 5th, which is like probably, I mean, it's really close to the Giant, but I had just...
To the what?
Giant food market. But I had just kind of segmented off everything on the other side of 15 as someplace that I need to drive to. So I would like drive
mm-hmm.
to the grocery store, and then one day I was like, wait a minute, this is like taking me the
a
same
quarter
amount
mile.
Of, yeah, yes. It was taking me the same amount of time as if I just walked there, because I need to do all these elaborate things to go park and
okay,
but anyway, I wonder if we can even look at like distances from places.
Right. So there are actually websites that even do that, that will help calculate the drive time or walk time and give you a graphical rendition of that. But the it really is a question of how you render this in ways that are comprehensible to people.
Yeah.
And there are certain bars, especially with traffic, because this is one of the issues that has changed. It's not just your perception. You know, it's not just this
what
imaginary...
has changed?
The amount of traffic has increased so much since, say, we were, even since Taylor was a child.
Yes.
Where? In the United States?
In the United States, yeah.
Car
just
traffic.
In general, car traffic has increased so substantially that whereas
why
people
would it
have
increase above and beyond like the rate of population growth?
My point is that people have this perception, for example, that stranger danger has increased massively and children are like at risk walking around on a street. And they will die.
I don't think
but
stranger danger.
Will...
I think the fear of stranger danger.
Right. The fear of stranger danger has far outpaces the actual stranger danger. But fear of traffic is actually barely keeping pace with traffic.
Wait,
traffic
why would there be more traffic per capita or per person?
Just our vehicle miles traveled did explode exponentially between basically 1980 and around 2007.
I wonder, I don't know.
And it was just so steep that the curves in general were so steep that there were substantial...
I mean, the only thing that comes to my mind is suburbanization.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes,
I mean,
in general, suburbanization.
Yeah. So, last thoughts on the traffic study
meeting. I have last thoughts after you.
Okay, all right. So, second to last thoughts on the traffic study meeting. I wonder So, I mean, we have these PennDOT whispers. I just wonder, like, are they going to give us suggestions about what we need to do? Like, okay, so...
That's what we're paying for.
That's what we're paying for. Like a bulleted list of what we need to do next.
Yeah, we're paying for how to work with PennDOT to move forward. We're not paying for design, actually. Okay. We're paying for data collection
and a set of strategy. Recommendations. Yeah.
Yeah, strategy, recommendations, okay. Process, but not design.
And then I'm assuming that the good folks on the Borough Council and the Lewisburg Neighborhood Corporation and this group will have a direction for this afterwards?
Ideally, yes. I mean, partly it's going to be a question of...
I mean, it's a process. It's a grassroots process.
Yeah. And we're going to see what wall we run into with PennDOT.
Okay, so I have two thoughts. First, like, you know, I was sitting there going, like, what if it's not as bad as everybody thinks, right? Like, these people seem like good data professionals. They're going to report the real data. And everyone who's literally bought into this, assumes that the data should show like the worst, should confirm our own worst suspicions. More traffic, damaging the buildings, higher speeds, more crash danger. Like, I'm shocked, just to go with crashes, I'm shocked that I don't hear about or know about more accidents or injuries. Like, it seems to me we either dodge a bullet or this kind of relates a little bit, I think, what you're saying earlier. Like, we have this perception that it is a really dangerous traffic corridor, and yet, just off the top of my head, I have not seen much showing that there's a lot of accidents.
You can actually look at the PennDOT data is available on crashes, and yeah, you have to go back 10 years to get
but don't go too far down. And I won't get into the weeds. But you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody who cares about this assumes that it's going to give us the really juicy data that's going to be like, we are vindicated. I'm like, what if it's not?
Well, okay. Here's the thing. This is what PennDOT, and this is so. 85th percentile speeds came up, and what are 85th percentile?
Of course,
speeds?
But they should have also put the standard deviation or the range, because it only takes one truck going 50 for you to think it's really
crazy.
Right,
but 85th percentile is the standard. That's how they measure it. So that's a separate piece of data, which will be in the comprehensive report. But how they benchmark it is with the 85th percentile speed, which means 85% of people are going that speed or slower. There are a few outliers above that. But
I don't know why you wouldn't report the outliers too. It's easy to do anyway.
One of the things is
it only takes one truck going 50 to kill a kid.
Yes, I agree. But historically, one of the things, or even currently, you'll see occasional letters to the editor, these sort of mass mailed things from the National Motorist Association, which is a pseudo grassroots organization that basically lobbies on behalf of.
I think AstroTurf is much better than pseudo grassroots.
Okay, AstroTurf, sure. And they are,
that's fair.
They're basically, arguing that you should set the speed limit to the 85th percentile speed, which means no matter how fast people drive, you should just always keep setting the speed limit to that so that no one is ever speeding, which is absurd because that means you would always be ratcheting up the speed until you start adding in the concept of complete streets and the idea that the streets are for everyone, in which case, whatever speed, the 85th percentile speed for people who are actually able to yield for pedestrians at crosswalks at unsignalized intersections, the 85th percentile for them is going to be on Market Street around 19 miles an hour, honestly speaking.
Yeah.
And those are people who are actually treating the road
The way it's supposed to be.
They're actually able to drive legally down the road and able to yield. My point is that you have to actually get PennDOT to be like, oh yeah, pedestrians, not on page 8 of the slideshow, but on page 1.
No, so this actually relates to, and this is going to be the last comment on this, like...
because Jordy said so.
Yeah. Okay. Look, you went to Sweden, my fucking podcast. To me, like, the core issue is that we live here. We live in and around and on Market Street and through it and all that, and we don't control it. And I'm a little leery about how much we can really do given the legal context and that we don't control it. And one of the most interesting things to me that I heard said, and I wanted to know more about the legal and historical context, is that, you know, somebody said Market Street, I think one of the engineers, was not designed as a through street. If that's true, when did it become 45 and when did we cede control of it?
Okay, I can't answer when it became Route 45, but originally Market Street was a dead end because you had a ferry and you had the railroad bridge, which was actually aligned with St. John Street. So basically, Market Street was the destination. You arrived at the market, which is sort of a widening right. road between 2nd and 4th Streets. There you go. You are in the market. That was actually the only real yeah. public space. We had a vestigial public space in front of the courthouse, but it never really got developed.
Yeah. Fuck, you used inchoate and vestigial in one podcast. Thank That's you very amazing.
Much. Yeah. In one sentence.
She'll be here all week.
So, but you know what I mean? Like, if we can't really get control... I mean, the borough can't really do a lot to 45.
We are
that's one of the things.
But you're the one who's like wanting to go way in the fucking like we. If anybody's still listening, God bless them.
Okay, all right. Thank you to everybody that donated to make this report happen. I really appreciate, just as a nerd, that someday in my hands I will be reading the Market Street Corridor traffic study.
That's right.
So I'm so grateful.
And
I'll put it by my bed.
And there are more weeds for anyone who's interested.
There are weeds on the weeds.
Yeah.
There's a weed store. There's a weed emporium on the weeds in the weeds.
On Twitter. And,
oh yeah. You know, I was thinking about that. I was like, you know, I love how you like retweet or like my tweets, but like you and me retweeting each other is not really a dynamic really, that's gonna yeah, like it's not really gonna power us to the Twitter stratosphere.
No.
All right.
So then,
Green New Deal. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
We headed to the Green New Deal.
Many of us walking or biking over there.
That's true. I carpooled, so. instead of driving.
Ride sharing.
Yeah. For people who have been following us very closely, Sam in her sort of, what is it we're looking for? Like paragon of you know, be the change you want to see in the world has been doing 30 days of biking. And then I've been doing a parallel 30 days of biking if you're a like lazy schlub. And so it's been I wish I'd done it every day, but I don't have something funny to say every day. It's been great fun. But I was like today, I was like, I biked to the Market Street traffic study and then to the Green New Deal. I was like, that should count for like 3 days of biking. Right?
What's a bad day for Jordy's biking habit?
It's talking about biking while hiding eggs, apparently.
Yeah, right. I was like, this Easter egg reminds me of a wheel. It's perfect, you know, in its roundness or something like that. It's just meditations
on it. I have to say that I had some weak biking days, and in fact, I had to unicycle for some of them. So
you haven't been in the car? Or you just No.
You're allowed to bike. You're allowed to drive, too. But
I sort of started making sort of little jokes about it. I mean, I think it's great. I was also like, and I trust that Sam knows I say this from a place of love and respect. Like, you're so good at it. I was like, I think people need to see like somebody who struggles with this. like if she's the A-plus student, I'm the C student.
Somebody needs to model the C student.
Like one of the days I was like, I went to find my bike. And it's a good idea to do it this time of year. I assume it's because it's spring and people are.
Yes.
And I was like, where's my bike lock? Who took my bike helmet? God damn it, you know.
That's exactly what it's for, because May is bike month, and so they do this for April.
Oh, and so you're all set.
Yes.
And I will say that, like, it's definitely helped me to be like, oh yeah, I could bike. I could do that.
So the Green New Deal Forum, I missed the first
Town
bit.
Hall.
Town Hall. I missed the first bit, but the second bit was a wonderful presentation from Nicole Ferraguna from Susquehanna Valley Progressives.
Progress.
Okay, I thought they were...
No, they changed the name to Progress a while ago.
Okay. About...
Those expats, they don't know anything.
Mm. Yeah,
I know,
right.
Yeah, changed the world on
mm-hmm. Well, that happened before you left, but anyway.
Okay, whatever. About how the fossil fuel industry is totally...
It's about Shamokin and coal. And,
yeah, which is
And she interwove with her, because she's from there, and her family history.
Yeah.
I'd never heard those stories. I thought that was great. She was super good at that.
And then the second or the third bit. Did any of you see the first?
Yeah.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then one of you should talk about that before
it
we go into the dairy farmers.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Well, Billy Kelly sang some songs. That's always
fun.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I love Billy.
And then...
You probably just heard him.
And then... I don't... Were you there when the one student who...
Yes. Darby.
Darby
spoke.
Darby?
Yeah,
I remember thinking he was very charismatic, and I have no memory of what he said.
He talked about just growing up in Buffalo and
mm-hmm.
just how basically environmental impacts have a very personal toll on people. He talked about traffic as it happened and asthma related to particulates and the issues of just more vulnerable communities.
And then there was a student who gave kind of an overview of what the Green New Deal is. And that, full disclosure, this is one of these cases where, like, I'm like, sure, like, that sounds smart. It sounds like where we've been headed for 20 years. You know, we need to link economic justice issues and environmental. And I haven't read the resolution. I don't know what all the ins and outs are.
It's actually good,
yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, and this has been the change in my life in the last couple of years where I see other people who, you know, I think it was liberals, progressives, they're like, well, do I agree with 80% of it? If I don't agree with at least 83, I'm not sure I can buy in. And I'm like, oh, for God's sakes, yes. Okay, just yes. We can work out the details later.
Yeah. I mean, that's exactly what this is. It's just a resolution.
It's a rough draft. It's a very initial rough draft. It's an outline.
Yeah.
And really, yeah, the whole point is you don't have to agree with 83%. Put in your 100%.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Change the debate. Right. That was their...
Well, it is true, though, the purity police are out in force. And I have to admit that...
Do you know who Ross Garcetti is?
No,
because he was on my Facebook climbing up my ass about whether they're the Sunrise's new real progressives or not. And I'm
I don't know. Now I know who you're talking about, but I don't know who he is other than on Facebook. But I have to admit that I have frustrations with it because it is already so partisanized.
And when you say it, you mean the one that Ocasio-Cortez put forward? Like, are these all the same Green New Deal? Because to me, I understood it more as kind of like... really kind of a label, and then...
I think it is a label, but just even the graphics, the terminology, all of those things, I thought it was interesting when...
Are you the person who told me this will fail in rural Pennsylvania?
I probably said something like that, yeah. Simply because it just says it's trying to refer...
It says New Deal.
It's intentionally referring to the New Deal, which... is people are already inoculated against, and it even uses like in the graphics for this particular thing, the poster and all the national graphics had to have that stuff in it. It echoed like the New Deal, you know, the bas reliefs on all the public buildings from the 1930s.
Holy shit! Inchoate, vestigial, and bas relief.
Thank you very much. Okay, so
any of those words, to be honest.
Well, you obviously didn't do well on your SAT.
I know malice, though.
Do you want definitions?
Inchoate, what is that?
It's sort of disorganized. A mess.
Yeah.
Was it vertiginal?
Vestigial.
It's like not...
Your appendix.
Yeah. Something that used to have a function and no longer.
And a bas relief is like when it looks
a
like...
low a low relief sculpture. It's like a carved into the side of a little bit.
You know, it's very like worker 30s, like Art Nouveau. It's cool.
Like the Milton.
The Milton post office is a classic example of New Deal architecture.
You know, I actually was saying just real quick, the Sunrise like logo, I keep going like, I'm not sure if it reminds me of Star Wars. Or Nazis. Like
I know. It looks like one of these white nationalists.
Yes.
Doesn't it a little bit?
Yes, it does a little bit.
Yeah.
I kind of actually like that.
It's sort of
spade-like, and so I think it's a little bit like spoofing them. All the Identity Europa guys and everything, they've got to have something like that.
What's the one with the three arrows going down?
I don't know. I'm not up on my
white
supremacist iconography.
I only maintain a...
You know, we need a symbologist like Robert, what's his name from the Dan Brown's books? Robert Landon or whatever.
Oh, right.
I thought that was the funniest thing. Symbologist. Like, that's not a fucking thing. It's not a field symbologist.
Well, actually, I am giving a lecture on the far right to the SV Progress in November. So
cool.
I should have my act together on that.
Sometimes... late at night, I go through Twitter and get really into it, and then I have a terrible week. So I try not to do that.
Right.
So somehow we were talking about Sunrise.
Yes. So basically, this was a program which seemed very scripted, but scripted up probably in a good way. So there's sort of this national movement, and they're trying to prompt people at the local level to figure out how it relates to that.
I talked to Sofia Vega, who was the state organizer, for like an hour in the middle of the day. And I mean, there are things about Sunrise. I'd be curious kind of where their intellectual DNA for like how they're doing this comes from.
Yeah.
But I mean, there are things to me that seem smart. Like they've got, they're calling them hubs, which of course is close to my heart, but there's like 8 or 9 around Pennsylvania. And then last year we helped, they had sort of a Johnny Appleseed model of people coming through and doing these talks. I was a little concerned that they didn't seem to do
as much follow through as they should. Like, they had people come through, give talks, and it seemed to me like, and I was a little bit like, you know, like the people who we have to find housing.
Were they actually on the podcast? Did we do a podcast with
them? Gunther and
yeah.
I remember I made fix them brunch, but I don't remember a podcast.
I never met Gunther.
Gunther was great. He was from Wisconsin. He was such a like Wisconsin Midwest yeah, like farm boy. He was like 6'3", 280, you know, drank buttermilk, you know, by the gallon.
Maybe he listens to the podcast.
I hope so. I'm still.
The dairy farmers would love to meet him.
They
the
really would. Hey, by himself.
That was literally the best part of the whole thing. I am so happy that I heard them. They were so kick ass.
The one who was like, you know, we're let's see, it was Farm Women United. Farm Women United, right? Is the name of the organization. Yeah. And she was like, you know, seemed very kind of apple pie, like middle American. And she's like, you know, we're a really militant, radicalized organization. I was like,
dissidents.
Well,
I was like, shit.
We used to be called angry women, you know?
Yeah. I was sitting next to Kanye DeLong, who was one of the nasty women. And then they changed their name because they thought it sounded too mean. She was like, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Damn straight.
Yeah. No, I loved
them.
And great.
The best was she had 14 children, she said.
Yeah.
And then this one student tried to ask this trollish question. He was just like rambling on
classic
about it.
Classic Bucknell, Connecticut bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Total.
Well, conservative club.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, you know, and, you know, Ocasio Cortez. And then, you know,
ran
I was the one.
Senate.
You know.
Wait, no. She didn't even run for Senate until she was asked. What?
I mean, it was just so, it was like, just like he just tapped into the Fox Chiron and it just started coming out of his mouth. And I was the one, I was like, what's your question?
Yeah,
just,
I'm so glad you did
just
that.
Just get to your question.
It was just like.
But anyway, and then she like destroyed, but his question was something like, how can you support something that is about the federal government? Like,
and federal government control.
Control.
Yeah.
And she like went into this like history of like price controls and farm policy and like,
FDR.
You know, FDR and how it changed after World War II. And I was just like, oh my little young friend. Like,
she just,
you know, she spanked you like a baby calf learning how to breathe in the world. You know, it was a beautiful thing to watch.
Yeah, she did mention having one son who was like that.
She did, that's right.
He has a problem with government control. But, you know, and there are too many, you know, too many regulations, and some of them are really crazy. But at the same time, we know clean water. We know clean air. And we want these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they definitely were the show stealers.
Yeah.
So,
although Nicole Ferraguna at the end had just the most beautiful framing. And I'm going to get it wrong, but it was...
No, you're not.
She was talking about... Or no, it was on a question related to should there be private versus public...
engagement.
Yeah. And, I mean, she said there should be a mixture of both, which I think that everybody probably agrees with. But she said something about...
private, profit is private.
The gains...
The profit has been privatized and the costs have been socialized.
Yeah, and so she talked about how these coal companies extracted all the wealth from their community and then left the mess for everybody else to clean up. And I thought that was a fabulous framing.
And that's exactly why we have
Yeah, and then actually the part that I really loved was she was like, people always talk about how we shouldn't pick winners and losers.
Oh.
But we pick winners and losers all the time.
Yeah.
And that was like... she just did some master framing there.
And not only she's I totally right. And just to, you know, and you can even connect them because the very fact that we've allowed all these externalized costs, like from fossil fuels to the environment, is picking a winner.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's saying that that's an acceptable form of profiteering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all of these.
And
negative...
we have liquidated the people of our country. And so that's what's great about the Green New Deal. It's saying we want to invest in the country and invest in the people. We are not planning on further liquidations, which would be bad because we're at rock bottom already.
Here's the thing with the framing. I actually feel like where Nicole was, at least compared to some of the Sunrise things I've seen, or Green New Deal, like, I feel like it's too often kind of like, there's this problem, and let's solve them both. And there's not necessarily a clear, bright, connective argument between them, and that's the argument, right? Like, they are both related to externalizing costs. One is the externalized cost, I wouldn't quite put it this way, but it's the externalized cost of environmental damage, and it's the externalized cost of social damage, you know, and they both come from from the ability of large corporations. From large corporations to gain all of the value of those externalized costs. And I mean, there's a more elegant way to put it, but that is what kind of connects them in my mind.
I do think that for the Green New Deal may not be making that case very well, except that they are assuming that that is obvious, right? We had tonight a presentation of their base assumptions and then what follows from that. And they laid out climate change is happening, it's man-made, it's on an urgent
timeline. Some women made it too.
Right. Okay. Humankind generated climate change.
I'm finally getting that. Okay.
And then they draw you along, the idea being that eventually you get to the way we solve this is by a massive investment, and that massive investment should simultaneously address the people most injured by this, and also lift up the entire country.
I mean,
and that's the thing that people don't get. Maybe it's not, maybe that framing needs to be more explicit for certain crowds, because I think that's the part where you do lose rural America.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is a problem because, I didn't catch her name, or I'm going to mangle it, the head or founder of Sunrise, they had the video of her.
But, oh, yeah.
When she was talking, and then a little bit some of the students are involved, it was like, we need to invest, we need to do this. And I was a little bit like, what do you mean we? Like, where's the money coming from? And one guy at the end asked this, and again, I haven't looked a lot of it, but to me, there are things you can do with probably that involve either changing tax incentives or with changing the rules of the game so that investment in renewables is on an even playing field that don't necessarily involve a huge amount of expenditure. And
so, know what they need to be doing, though? They need to be showing the cost of inaction right next to the cost of the Green New Deal. Because if you think the cost of the Green New Deal is a lot, wait until you see the cost of doing absolutely nothing over the next
20 years. Well, that does exist. Totally true. That already exists. And that math, but the problem is there's a huge, huge cohort that already knows that, right?
Yeah.
That they're like, knows the cost of an action. We've been paying attention to the math.
But why aren't we hanging that number over the head of the conservatives when they're like,
because it is a little bit complicated math. Because it depends on exactly where business as usual.
No. You're being too honest. But just pick a number and stick to it.
But, have you ever seen these numbers that FAIR uses with how much immigration costs every year?
Right.
It's a complete fabrication. Yes, it is. If they're doing that, let's at least throw some scientific data at them about what the cost of an action is. They're being completely dishonest.
Well,
but can we at least use this?
So
estimate,
Dwayne
you know?
Griffin has this awesome new lecture he's giving lately, and everyone should see it or hear it. And I think he gets into that pretty specifically.
I mean,
leave it there.
Little teaser.
I did and I'll tell you, just to make the Green New Deal even more complicated. But to me, and this is one of these things where I think it's a good idea, and then I don't research it because I don't want to find out it's not a good idea. But the amount we spend, the amount of our military that goes to protecting the global flow of oil is a direct subsidy to the oil industry. And
and
I actually tried to calculate it once, and I thought it would be a few cents on the dollar. And this was a very rough calculation. And I was shocked. In other words, what we're paying out of our back pocket towards keeping gas prices low, it was
But even the Pentagon, independent of protecting gas prices, they're worried
about climate change. Yeah.
Threat intensification, right? That's that.
You know you're onto something when the Pentagon is your ally.
Exactly.
So I want to pose a question to you that is perhaps, in my opinion, bridging the two events that happened tonight. We were challenged by the women dairy farmers.
I'm just not sure I'm ready for such a bridge so far.
Okay. They challenged us to think about what we can do in our own local community bring about the Green Deal. They did.
The farmers did. I don't remember them saying that at all.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically saying, read the Green New Deal and talk to your legislators and
do it right here.
Yeah, I thought the Green New Deal people said go talk to your legislators.
But
anyway,
the farmers did.
All right,
farmers
did. Okay.
So what does a Green New Deal look like in central Susquehanna Valley and broadly, but
you
specifically
little
Lewisburg?
Shit. I'm the one elected politician, and they're like, we got to go out and pin the politicians.
Yeah, yeah, Jordy, what's your plan?
And I'm, yeah, this I is a campaign season. Plan
right now.
I mean, honestly, I'm a little uneasy because, like, you know, if you ask me, like, if I have X units of political capital.
30 days of biking.
30 days of biking.
No, but for real, right? Like, if we could kind of make this simple, like, if I could get bike lanes in Lewisburg or a resolute.
But where?
On Market Street, bike lanes on Market Street, or a resolution supporting the Green New Deal. If I could do one or the other, they want me to get a resolution supporting the Green New Deal.
Well,
and
that's stupid, honestly.
Why?
I mean, what is that going to do in the broad scale?
Oh, well, that's what they said they wanted. That I heard them say they want all these, like, local municipalities.
They do want organizations to endorse it.
I thought we should get Dance Church and Dad's Night to endorse it.
Awesome.
Yeah, she was like 2,000 groups. I was like, I can deliver 30.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
None of them are legal entities,
right.
But
it's
they're
in
all
90% of Democrats who agree with this. So that was one of the interesting statistics. She pointed out that 90% of Democrats are in favor of the Green New Deal and 60% of Republicans. And I was like, how many independents? You know, because and non-voters, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Well, they're not human. We don't care about that.
But that is the overall context we're looking at. Between 90 and 60, and yeah, all the unwashed masses, you wind up with, you know, there is support for this concept, but the devil is in the details, and they're asking for help right now with exactly that. And I think that's the positive part. That's the part that didn't happen in 2007 with the Step It Up, you know, the 350.org efforts. Yeah. We needed to get to 80% reductions over 1990 levels of carbon by 2030. You know, I mean, like, I can't even say that sentence. So this is like, we need to just radically mobilize. We need to do specific things, but which are the specific things? Yeah. And so now we're at that point. In terms of our community, I actually think that this is one of the cases where I'm sort of torn, where I feel like I'm starting to look more towards Shamokin, away from Lewisburg, towards Shamokin, or I have been involved with, you know, local food efforts mm-hmm. in the region for a while. And I didn't ask a dairy farmer question because we were going to wind up in the weeds, but I'm like, you know, I do pay. Like one woman asked, you know, I get.
She said $3.50 for a half gallon?
Yeah, I pay $4 a half gallon at the pharmacy, and it basically, the pharmacy isn't getting any money. It's all going to the a dairy in Lancaster, basically. But it's a dairy that does their own production and processing.
I'll tell you what, that milk is really fucking good, too.
The butter.
I haven't had the butter yet.
The butter. No, you should try the butter.
Okay. But, you know, they don't pay us. You know, they're not endorsers yet, so we're not going to say the name. But anyway.
The butter's like $8 a tub.
But what are you saying? What you're starting to say what we should do locally, and you're not finishing your sentence.
Right. I've had too much scotch to finish my sentence. But yes,
we're
still not an endorser.
Yeah, we're still not getting a sponsorship from the
I don't have solutions yet, but I'm actually at the point where I'm trying.
No, but you said what do you mean you're more focused?
I'm looking towards Shamokin.
I'm looking towards Shamokin, and I'm starting to and thinking about all of these things coming together. Transportation, sustainability in communities, making communities more livable, trying to figure out who is in Shamokin now, what capacity is there, who could be empowered to do things that need to be done right now, who needs to, in other words, what needs to happen at a truly local level, what can be cultivated at the local level, what needs to happen from a regional level to facilitate that, to provide funding, to provide oversight, to try to help get
Honey,
people
you still
going
haven't said what the subject of the sentence is.
Oh.
So here's
what is the thing you want to see happen in Shamokin?
I'm looking at rural economic development options and trying to figure out how this works, not from a Harrisburg-centric position, but from a Susquehanna Valley.
I mean, I think this ties back to what I said, which was to keep it simple, I'm on the borough council. Do I work this year to get a resolution supporting Lewisburg loves the Green New Deal or some specific thing that would move towards that but might not have any kind of a label on it? I thought I heard them really clearly say that our goal is to build a coalition, you know, of organizations, but also, you know, little, you know, states and other people to all point us nationally towards this. And I was a little uncomfortable with that because I'm like the devil's in the details. And I'm like, I think a Green New Deal as like a sort of broad direction makes sense, yeah. but it's going to have 100 kinds of implementation that are going to mean different things at local levels, and there should be more local control over what that yeah. means.
See, I mean, I had this moment of
83% purity test. There you go. Right.
83% purity?
Yes.
Like I didn't make it?
Yeah. No, no. You're saying, well, I don't know yet. You haven't told me exactly what it is.
No, but I'm all in. Okay. Green New Deal, sure. Yeah. Oh, but I'm not sure that I'd rather spend my time trying to push Washington and presidential candidates mm-hmm. to adopt it than Lewisburg.
I agree. To answer your question, I think you should work on implementing these policies. I'm holding up the Green New Deal resolution mm-hmm. passed by AOC.
Not passed, or proposed.
Introduced by AOC. I think you should work on implementing that in Lewisburg. And I had this moment of real clarity and optimism.
Without a resolution.
So just do it.
Just doing well, the
what's
things.
In it? I haven't even seen it.
Well, you should read it.
Well, but, now we have it in our hands. They
conveniently printed it out.
They handed it out.
What is it? ASMR or whatever?
Reading the Green New Deal. No, don't. I hate that stuff. Okay.
Okay, so
I'm the anti-ASMR.
So I had this moment of great clarity and optimism, and it was during this day of adaptation in, I'm going to school in Lund University, as probably most people know from listening to this podcast. We had to talk about what does climate change adaptation in your community mean? And then we had to talk about how it made us feel to talk about this. And I was thinking about what it would look like in our community, Lewisburg, Central Susquehanna Valley broadly. And I mean, the three things that I could think of was developing transportation that encouraged the use or made it just as easy to use your bike or walk somewhere as it was to use your car.
Or to share a ride.
The second thing that I could think of is supporting local agriculture and cutting down the local food chain. Not cutting down the local food chain, but cutting down...
Shortening the food chain.
Shortening the chain so we can just get most of what we need from Union County or around here, Lancaster County, wherever. And then the third thing that I could think about was closing the coal power plant in Montour County that is giving catastrophic damage to that area. And those are the three things. And I had a great moment of optimism because it's like, so if we're asking people to eat healthier food, get outside and use their bike and walk and be healthier and enjoy the day, and then like close the coal power plant that is polluting this area, clean air, like then I'm optimistic about all those three things. And I realize the great systemic barriers, and if it was that simple, it'd be done. But I don't know, like that's what I'm seeing.
What I liked about tonight was that I could see that separate from my complaints about the branding and framing I mentioned earlier. In other words, tonight it was about shovels, pictures of shovels, a sort of aesthetic of army stencils for the lettering.
I don't remember any pictures of any shovels.
There were lots of shovels.
Yeah.
Okay. And
it was in the videos.
Yeah. And their whole little thing is like the head of a shovel.
I thought it was a sunrise.
It's a sunrise, but it's inscribed in a shovel. Yeah.
Like as if Abraham Lincoln had drawn it with yellow coal.
Exactly.
Sulfur. Okay, saltpeter. Okay, basically, what I think we have the potential for is this vision that you're describing is fantastic, but it ultimately must rest on a functional job market and good jobs.
Yeah.
For people, and that is what was on their t-shirts, right? I actually couldn't see the t-shirts, but I finally decided. They said, we have a right to good jobs and a livable future. And I'm like, who's gonna argue with that?
But that's good.
To have the jobs. You have to have the jobs in order to be able to make use of all these other things, to also compensate people for this healthy food, have a job to bike to, have a job to bike from, and then to something fun to do. And that was what was actually finally sort of reassuring about it. Mm-hmm. It got away from, I felt, a certain New Deal referencing, and was just about this sort of down and dirty, I got a shovel, I need to do good, honest work, and then I need to come home and feed myself real food. And yeah. this and is the recipe the for what we need to do in the future.
Yeah.
We're not going to have time to get to my idea.
Jordy is resentful.
Very.
We want to hear your Jordy idea, pouts. Jordy.
I'm having an Eeyore moment.
Jordy, tell us your idea.
Oh. Yeah. How long are we in, though?
We're super in. So, okay. Briefly, and then just quick reaction. Like, okay. To me, like, since 2017, and we started the Hub for Progress and other things, and Indivisible, and blah, 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 like, the central puzzle is how do we get people who are going to support these kinds of ideas and policies who can win, you know, in our area, either at the county level or state legislature or state senate or maybe Congress. Let me finish. So here's my idea. So that's the problem. So my idea is, like, in 2018, looking across Pennsylvania Senate and House races, we had, I don't know exactly, I think over 100 candidates run, a lot of them first-time candidates. It's like a banner.
Where?
Across Pennsylvania.
Across Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania House and Pennsylvania
Senate.
Okay. Right? So roughly 100, I think, or a few more. Right, and somebody, the Democratic Party or other people, you know, they had their statistical models about how each one would do. 32%, 36, 38, 40, you know. Like, we were talking about this. If you just look at the map, you just look at wins, the wins for Democrats were mostly or all in the collar counties of Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. And the red gains were actually in places like ours. But that only looks at the wins, right?
But actually...
Let me finish. Yeah. So what I think we need is to do, like, a deep, like, a mixed data, a mixed method kind of study, like the traffic study, that would, like, let's say there were 115 of these races. So, you know, we pick 24. 8 who underperformed, 8 who performed as expected, and 8 who overperformed. And go in and do, like, look at, like, the, you know, what it is about their districts and look at some of the demographic stuff, but then look at how much money they raised, what they spent it on, look at factors about the candidate, what was their biography, what was their campaign style, did they rely on volunteers, or did they have paid people? And then see if we can learn something about who, especially who overperformed. I mean, that's what I'm interested in, but I want to balance it with the others.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's still, I mean, it blows my mind, and I've been, I think, reasonably involved in politics, there's still an awful lot of, like, you know, lick your thumb, rule of thumb. Yeah. It was like, well,
we're going to do three robocalls, or a like, and a pit canvas.
Or like, in the worst way, people are like, yeah, you know, Ocasio-Cortez won. We can do it in Pennsylvania. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
This area has,
excuse me?
This area has nothing to do with that. And I'm, when I'm saying that, don't look at me like I'm a racist. I'm not a fucking racist. I mean, maybe I am, but not in this moment.
No. This area does not have a Twitter game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. P85 does not have a Twitter game.
I think you guys are central players in the central PA Twitter game.
33 followers here.
We've got a quorum in the room here.
So I think that needs to be done, and I've been thinking about it for like 6 months, and I think that I should do it. I think I should write a proposal for that kind of research study, and I should see if I get somebody to fund it. And I'll either find out that somebody is already doing it or that it's not being done.
I think you should do that, because I don't think that's being done. And, I mean, it was... Weren't Grant and Green doing these...
Who?
Grant and Green, I think they were from Yale or something like that. They were doing electioneering tactics, studying mm-hmm. the efficacy of them. And I mean, I think they were doing it in like 2006 or something like that. I mean, it's very recent. But it's hard to.
Are you kidding? That's like the Stone Age. But okay, whatever.
No, but even still, like that's like 12 okay. years ago. You know, like
I know I was alive.
I was barely.
So you think it's worth doing? What about you?
I think it's worth doing.
I think you should go for it. Definitely. Yeah. I do. At the same time, like I think that's fantastic. And are we allowed to mention other things happening at the national level today?
Sure. Yeah. Why? What happened?
Well, no, just nothing specific today, just the overall gestalt. I'm watching things
about... Oh, my
about
God. Another one.
Watching...
Sam Word things. Girl Pearson.
I like Word Girl. Thank you very much.
I love that show.
I love it too, yeah.
You've seen it? Who's the guy who like shoots ham?
I didn't actually watch it. I like the concept of Word Girl.
Oh, no, you should watch it.
I don't watch TV. Okay. Yes.
Keep going.
Basically, the... I want to see a world in which we don't have, on the left and the right, people doing criming. Right, so we have like
doing priming
for every Manafort, we have a Podesta, uh-huh. And basically we have this problem. And I would love to see people doing productive things with research mm-hmm. about, you know,
yeah.
I was just picturing the tens of thousands of tweets we're gonna get because you just compared Manafort to Podesta. But go ahead.
I'm saying that other people are comparing them.
Oh. Yeah.
Other people that has already happened. I did not crazy. Compare them. That is already out there. And they're like, this guy did this, and so did this guy. Therefore, yeah.
People call that whataboutism, right?
Who's Roger Stone?
I don't even know.
Carville, probably.
Yeah, probably. Who knows? I mean,
or Rachel Maddow.
My point is simply that there are these weird versions of symmetries, and mm-hmm. and they're problematic. And what you're describing sounds like it's so... pure and honorable and non-lucrative that you should totally go for it.
Wow, I think you just summed up my career.
Yeah.
Pure, honorable, non-lucrative. That explains the last 40 years of my life. Thank you, Sam, okay. 32 years.
Yes.
To answer your first question, though, about what do we do around here to elect people, I think we, and here's my very honest...
Drink more scotch.
Drink
Sorry.
More scotch, yeah. I think that what we need to do around here is, A, win in places where there's... you know, run local municipal candidates where there is, like in Lewisburg or East Buffalo, although we haven't been doing that well there recently. We run and win candidates there.
Get to the point.
And then we look at races where there's no contender, a Democrat or Republican, field candidates there. And then we basically build capacity, take pot shots at the Republicans for all the other stuff, and then just wait. That's basically it. I think that's
were you the one that said in 20 years we'll be in great shape last night? I think
maybe,
you are.
Maybe
yeah,
I was, yeah,
yeah. That really caused it was like felt like a stone in the room.
Yeah, really. In 20 years we're gonna be great.
Do you think that the Union County Democrats in 1826 when Jackson won, that was the last time that Union County swung for a Democrat, were like, we're golden now?
No. Union County has never gone for a Democrat.
I thought that that's what it showed in Peeler's data. That
I don't think even then.
Okay.
Well, it wasn't check. Really Union County.
It
was,
yeah,
the
exactly,
other thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was totally different.
Right. Union County is 1831.
But I mean, but the one promising thing about that is the party realignment. So I mean,
weeds. Here we are again.
Yeah.
Okay. Deep in the weeds. Okay.
Party realignment.
That is it. So if you have listened to all of this and you think I should do that research study and you know someone who would help fund it, get
yeah.
in touch.
I mean, do you guys?
Tweet.
Do you guys agree with me or no?
About what?
About the law.
No.
No?
I don't actually.
What do you think? Do you think we have a...
I don't.
Sam loses her shit.
Can't breathe.
I mean, the problem is the Democratic Party. It's a liability. It's a liability if you want to win countywide or
you know,
or state house. You should run. You should run as an independent and caucus
it's
with the
Democrats.
It's part
of my employment... plan that would be one of the things that people could be trained for employment for, like you know, you could have people who learn how to be, you know, auditors and things like that, because we don't want people who aren't suitable to be auditors to be elected to those things, but we should be
yeah
cultivating people to do that. We certainly have.
I mean, you're saying what you said, you know, run where we can win, Lewisburg second, where I'm the borough representative,
although you know some people
hold on
as Republicans.
Yeah. run people where it's uncontested.
I think they call those dinos.
Or yeah. Or I mean, you sort of set that up as versus what? Versus like running headlong against incumbents.
He's saying just be strategic.
I'm not opposed
to that.
Well, as opposed to what we're doing right this instant with 06 candidates for.
But people say this. Who was supposed to tell them to not run?
Oh, a smoke-filled room. I don't know.
There isn't one. Or if there.
No, but somebody has to be real with these people and be like, you know what? Why do we have five people running for one for realistically one seat. Okay. When there's a billion other
hold on
open seats.
The very thing that pisses me off the most about the Democratic Party is when there are smoke filled rooms.
And I'm not saying these has to be
it
smoky.
It doesn't have just, to be a smoke-filled room, but can saying, everyone have a conversation?
Yeah, it's like, how we're about doing people them a disservice.
Smoke-filled room.
Look,
yes.
I tried to get the people when they were talking about running, like four yes. of them, in a room. With,
and then number five showed up.
And none of them wanted to do it.
You know, it's, honestly, I mean, I
that's not quite fair.
It's dishonest, to be honest.
What's dishonest?
To be like... Now, even... five people running for one spot. It's super
maybe two.
Stupid. Maybe two. Yeah. Probably not though. but I mean it's just kind of bullshit, you know.
It's a little strange. I mean, one of the things that has been interesting
hold
are
on. It's actually good because if all of them get experience and run for other things, that's what
no,
we need.
It's not good. I mean, they could have had the exact same experience, right. only longer because like basically all of them are going to get knocked off in the primary if we had one of them running for treasurer and one of them running for whatever the hell else there is. I you know.
Okay, well, it's all at the UCDC's feet. I mean, that's what they're supposed to do.
Okay.
What were you going to say?
That's the smoke-filled room.
It's not in terms of saying who, because mm-hmm. you were talking about like getting in or out, and I think this is something that's come up because the local county committee, in practice, doesn't endorse people, and stays away from that. But it could, what am I trying to say? It could do a better job of recruiting people for those open seats. That's what didn't happen.
Right, and I think that's where I think it's great. At in other places, there are people coming out of the woodwork and getting slotted in, and we just missed that pachinko moment. Basically, we have people. Pachinko is a game of chance in the Far East where they basically they're
no more vocabulary words.
And, okay, never mind. basically, people weren't getting slotted in; they just all burst out. And so, yes, on the one hand, it's an embarrassment of riches. On the other hand, it's also sort of evidence of our lack of disorganization. So it's
lack
great.
Of organization.
Lack of organization. It's great on the part of the candidates. It's fantastic that people are stepping up, stepping forward.
Classic circling, yeah. So firing. What is this?
Circular firing squad.
Exactly.
Too much.
Okay, we're done.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Yeah, we should have some chit chat.
We had chit chat.
What's a word you want to speak?
Been to Stump Creek, Pence Creek, Pine Creek, Chambersburg, Middle Creek, Blakesley, Falls Creek, Shepherdsburg, Johnstown, Allentown, Shepherdstown, Lords Valley, Daisytown, Doylestown, Downingtown, Cherry Valley, Plain Grove, Mill Grove, Mechanics Grove, Swiss Vale, Ferndale, Carbondale, Monongahela, oh well, I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man, I cross the valley's fair, man, I beat the mountain air, man, travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere, oh, I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man, I cross the valley's fair, man, I the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share.